You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, fellas? Welcome back to Combos Over Cold Brew with me, your host, Emma Abrahamson. Today, we're talking to one of my favorite follows on TikTok, Jordan McMeans. He is literally a TikTok legend, and he also runs a 229 marathon, which is really impressive. He's only 21 years old. I thought this episode was super fun, so I hope you guys enjoy. Let's get right into it. All right, Jordan, welcome to the podcast. I'm super excited to have you on. To start off, do you want to just give a little bit of background about who you are and what you're about?
Sure. So my name is Jordan. I am going to be a senior at Villanova University. I'm studying political science and gender and women's studies, and I'm a biology minor. I'm from Southington, Connecticut. I'm a vegan, and I'm a marathon runner, I'm an activist, I'm all those things and more. I don't know, what else?
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good, you're also a TikTok star, you forgot to mention that.
Yeah, that's recent, that was kind of an accident, but.
Okay, so to start off, do you want to just kind of give your background in running, and how you started, how you found the sport, where it's taken you?
Absolutely. So I started running when I guess it was kind of a late start. I started in my sophomore year of high school. And what had happened was, so my freshman year, at the end of the year, you do like those gym mile runs, which like no one ever wants to do, but I was always like an overachiever and everything. So I ran like, I think right under like 5:30 or something in the gym mile when I was a freshman. And I had literally no running or training experience before that. I'd done like other sports. Like I used to play football, which no one like ever believes, but I did play football and I played baseball. But yeah, so then that day of the gym mile, it just so happened that the assistant cross country coach was like substituting my gym class that day. And so when I finished, he came up to me and he was like, do you run? And I was like, no, this was just like my first time. And then he was like, well, you need to join. And so I said, why the heck not? And then my sophomore year of high school, I joined cross country. And that's really when things started rolling. And I've been running ever since. I was like, okay, in high school, nothing special. I looked at some programs to run in college. I ended up choosing Villanova, where I was like one of the only two schools that I couldn't run at, and the other one was UConn. And then I joined the club team there, and then I became the president of the club team. I just recently stepped down from that position. I'm going into my senior year, and I'm just going to be a busy bee. Also, there's a pandemic, so I was like, whatever, someone else can deal with this. And yeah, so now I transitioned to marathon. I'm like a full-time marathon runner now, I guess. I have a coach specific for marathon. But yeah, that's like the spark note.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And I knew that you went to Villanova and I knew that you didn't run for the team. So I was curious because your marathon time is really, really good. It's is it 2:29:27?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. That is 5:42 per mile. And that is a very, very legit time. So did you ever think about joining the program? Was that ever an option for you? Because I know you said out of high school it wasn't. But, I mean, running that time is very legit. I know you don't run marathons in college, but
right.
Yeah, did you ever think about joining the team?
But yeah. So what happened with it was kind of a really – my college running experience has been very non-traditional, to say the absolute least. But when I got there freshman year, I did make some pretty notable performance improvements. Like, I was training a lot faster. I was, like, PRing in the 2 mile, like, in workouts. And I was kind of thinking in my head, I was like, I kind of want to run for this team. And the thing about it is that Villanova just has such a good men's team, and they're just so talented. But I think what it came down to, like, when I talked with the coach, he just didn't, like, he didn't need me for anything. So that was, like, the thing. It was kind of like I was really obsessed with getting on the team, like, freshman and sophomore year. And I ran my first half marathon at the end of my freshman year in, like, 1:16. And at the time, I thought that was, like, very fast. And I still think that's a respectable time. But, of course, now that's, like, slower than my marathon pace. But at the time, in freshman year, I thought that was fantastic. So I, like, emailed him about it. And I was like, listen, like, I ran, like, 1:16 and a half. Like, I want to try to come out for the team, or if you can just, like, help train me. And the coach there is Marcus O'Sullivan. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's actually, I think he has, like, the record for most sub-4 miles, like, run by one person ever.
Yeah, I've definitely heard of him.
Yeah, like, an Irish superstar. And he's just, like, he has that very, like, I don't know, his energy is just very serious, very serious. So I met with him in his office once, and he just has, like, all of his accomplishments and all these, like, pictures of people behind him of, like, all of his sub-4 milers he's coached. And I was just sitting in there, and he offered to kind of help me through the summer between my freshman and sophomore year. And so I kind of trained kind of based on, like, a rough outline of what he gave me and what he thought would help me become a better runner. And then I came back sophomore year, and I kind of had the intention of trying to come out for cross country and, like, running something impressive enough to walk on. And then while I was moving in, I was trying to debunk my bunk beds. They were, like, they were bunked when we got there, and me and my roommate did not want them bunked. So my mother and I tried to debunk the beds ourselves instead of, like, calling maintenance or help. And I ended up, like, long story short, I fell off the windowsill and broke a toe in my left foot and couldn't run for, like, 10 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah. So that was just a really unfortunate event. And then I came back from that injury, I was, like, grinding on the elliptical constantly. And I came back and I decided to run a half marathon. I ran the Hartford half marathon. I PR'd by, like, almost 2 minutes. And then I think that was when it was in that race, in that half marathon, that I was like, this is really, like, what I want to do. Like, I want to keep doing road races and road efforts. And I'm not really interested in joining. And so I still talk. I'm friends or acquaintances with a lot of the guys on the varsity team. Like, I know them all. But yeah, just, I'm not really interested in running for them anymore. I haven't been for a while. And it's honestly been a relief to not be thinking about that, because I think it was kind of consumed a lot of my freshman year with, like, thinking about trying to get onto that team. But yeah, so that was a long way of saying it. But
no, I mean, I find it really, really interesting. And I think a lot of the top marathoners don't run D1. Like, they don't. A lot of them come from kind of a background like yours. They just kind of, I mean, you didn't fall into the sport, but a lot of them find themselves, like, running competitively without even having to go the traditional route. So I think, mm-hmm. I mean, you're a perfect example of someone that did the same thing. So just because you don't run Division I athletics doesn't mean that you can't be a good, especially road racer, because when you're running 8Ks and 10Ks as a man in college, it's a lot different than running the marathon. So,
right.
And I'm sure if you joined the team, you wouldn't be running all these marathons. So
exactly.
I feel like you did end up making the right decision. Even half marathons, like, people aren't running mm-hmm. those if you're running in college yet. So,
yeah, like, looking back, I'm really happy with what the trajectory has been for my running. I'm really happy with it.
Yeah. And it's crazy. You're only 21 and you're already running marathons. How did you just decide to start running marathons? Because I feel like for me in college, I was like, oh my gosh, there's no way I'm ever going to run a marathon. Mm-hmm. My longest run was like 11 miles. I could never, even coming from my running background, I could never see myself jumping into marathons, especially at 21 years old. So why did you decide to do that?
So it's kind of like, so as I think it goes back a little bit to what my high school coaching style was like, because we were a pretty high mileage program. Like, we weren't like crazy, but I had some weeks in high school, even in my junior year, where I was like high 60s to like almost 70 miles in a week. So I think just I had so much like pounding and experience of like kind of like a lot of mileage training that it didn't seem that insane to me. And then I really liked the half marathon a lot. And if you look at like my PRs, like my performance, the longer I get is like insanely more impressive than anything I can do at any short distance. So once I did the half and I was like, I felt myself like attracted to the full marathon because I was like, I just have a feeling that that's going to like work so much better for me. Like, I think I'm very much someone who the longer I go, the better I'll be. Like, I really am attracted to the ultra marathon. I really do see myself doing ultra marathons like at some point in the future. But that's hopefully way off because I still want to run like, much faster at the marathon distance before I move to that. But the decision to do the Philly marathon was kind of because I just had so much, not so much time, but I had like ample time to train and fit it into my schedule and do the kind of training volume that I thought would be necessary to run like a fast marathon. And I was just worried because I was like, I don't know like what my life is going to look like when I graduate from Villanova. Like, I don't know what kind of time I'm going to have or like what effort I'm going to be able to put into running. So I was like, maybe the time is now to see like what I can do in the marathon as my first marathon. So I ended up, I think I decided like 5 months before the Philly marathon, I was like, you know what, like, I'm just going to do it. Like, what do I have to lose? And so I signed up and then I trained myself for my first marathon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I trained basically independently. I trained myself for it and it went pretty well. So, but yeah.
How did you figure out what to do for your training?
I read Jack Daniel's training book. I read that like cover to cover. My high school coach recommended it to me. I read it. So I based it a lot off of that. And then I kind of just went from like my own past experience of like what I thought like worked well for me and mixed with like what I thought I would like need to be able to accomplish to run a fast marathon. I do think I was a bit misguided. Like, some of the workouts I did, I don't think I needed to do. But I think one time I did like, I was on the track and I did 2x3 mile and then 2x2 mile with like a minute Whoa. And a half rest, like on a track. And looking back, I'm like, oh, that probably gosh. Wasn't needed. That probably wasn't like needed, but the result.
I mean,
was
it's
okay.
All learning experience. So
right.
You got to go through things to get better. Mm-hmm. And then now you're being coached. How did you find your coach?
So yeah, that I work at a running camp in Vermont, not happening this year, but one of my good friends from camp, her name is Megan, and she's qualified for it. She ran this past Olympic trials in the marathon. She's like a really talented marathoner. Like, I think she's so awesome and cool and amazing. But I was kind of chatting with her before the Philadelphia marathon, kind of asking her for like tips, because she was obviously has run really fast. And she was helping me out with it and giving me advice. And we talked like all leading up to that marathon. I remember running like a half marathon a couple weeks before, and I think I ran like just under 1:12. And prior to that, my goal for the full marathon was like 2:40. And she emailed me like the day after that half marathon and was like, you like need to be targeting faster than that. She was like, I think that if you have a good day, like under 2:30 should not be a problem for you. And honestly, I read that email and I'm like, this girl is like off her rocker. Like, I cannot run under 2:30. And then somehow that race just like, it understand it's like the best race of my entire life and the best I've ever felt in any race. And obviously, yeah, I went right under 2:30. And then the next day, when I was kind of recapping the race with Megan, she said, she was like, you know, like, if you want to talk to my coach, like, I think he would be really interested in, like, in helping you out. And, like, because you're obviously really talented at the marathon, I think you would really excel if you had, like, more structured coaching and training. And I was like, yeah, like, I'll reach out to him. And so I reached out to him a couple days later. He agreed to, like, take me on as one of his athletes. And so he's been coaching me remotely since last November.
Oh,
and that's
nice.
How I found him. And he sends me like my training plan every week. I really liked working with him. He's really great. He kind of like adapts the training to whatever I like think I need and what he thinks is best. And it's been good. I mean, I actually haven't raced since because of everything that's going on. So
well,
I think I'm better than I was, but hard
you
to
can
say.
Feel it usually.
Yeah.
What has been the biggest difference in your training with a coach, like versus being on your own? Because I think it's really admirable to me, someone that can train themselves, because for me, the accountability is the biggest thing. I need someone to hold me accountable. So for you, like what has been the biggest benefit of getting a coach?
I think it would be that when I was coaching myself, I tended to neglect the things and the training that I did not like want to do or that I didn't like doing. So for me, that was like anything fast. So I was doing like literally almost zero actual speed work. Like I was doing all my workouts were like either like long intervals or tempos. And I just like wouldn't do speed. I just kept telling myself, I was like, I don't need to do speed, whatever. Speed is like not real in the marathon. And then when he started coaching me, he was kind of like, well, actually, yes, it is. And you're going to do it. And so that was probably the biggest difference. And I have felt like I'm so much faster, like just in terms of like turnover and leg speed since joining him. And he has kind of gotten me to hit paces in workouts that I like did not think were like possible. I think I was giving myself like much slower interval times than he gave me. And I definitely felt like I had a giant, giant fitness jump when he started being like, no, actually your 1200s need to be like 345, or like not 410. And I was like, are you serious? And he was like, yeah. So yeah. So like that was probably the biggest thing, is kind of just knowing like what the actual like work I need to be putting in to like get the results that I'm kind of expecting, and not just kind of like going off of like whatever I kind of feel like that day, which is what I was doing like when I was coaching myself.
Yeah, I feel like that's why even the most professional of runners have coaches, just because everyone needs something different. And most of the time, like doing it on your own, like you said, it's like you neglect the things that you don't really want to do or don't feel like doing. For me, it's accountability. For a lot of people, yeah, it's just like getting out the door and doing it. So that's why coaching, I think, is so important. And just finding a coach that you trust and that you like, it can really make a difference. Mm-hmm. Even if you feel like you have all the knowledge in the world, it just makes a huge difference to have someone that is guiding you through and someone that is supporting you through the hard times that running brings.
Yeah, right. Especially just like the accountability, I think, is something that helps so much, because I would just like, when you're only accountable to yourself, it's kind of like you'll give yourself like some slack. You'll be like, well, you aren't really feeling like that good today. So if you like skip the last 2.5 reps of your workout, it's like not that big of a deal. But like when you have to like explain to your coach why you didn't finish the workout, then it's kind of like, I don't even want to have to deal with that. So I'm just going to finish the workout. So I think that's really helped me. But yeah.
Exactly. And what do you think has been your biggest source of improvement besides for coaching? Like, what have you done on your own that has shown consistent improvement over the years?
That is such a fascinating question. You know, I think a lot of my mentality has changed a lot from high school to college. I think in high school, I used to get so incredibly stressed. I was so stressed out going into every race. Like some races, like I kid you not, I like was near tears, like starting the race, which is like, I was so scared. And I like every single time I raced, I like wanted to run a PR, which like makes sense. But at the same time, in high school, you are literally racing so much, too much, if you ask me, looking back. And so I would get myself so worked up and so stressed that like halfway through the race, if I was like, I'm not going to PR, I would just like completely check out. And I feel like my performances were never, I never like felt good about my race. Like it was very rare for me to walk away from a race and like feel like I got anything positive out of it. And I think that's changed a lot. I think in college, I just have a lot more confidence in my training and like my ability, and I'm much more excited to race. I like racing now. I used to dread it in high school, and now I like really look forward to it. And I kind of get on the line and I think to myself, I'm like, you have like done the work, like you are fast, like you can do what you think you can do. And I think that has been probably the biggest thing, is trying to keep working on that mindset. And I always it's kind of like weird, but I will like, something that's helped me is I'll look in the mirror like a couple times a week and just like repeat little things to myself, and I'll be like, I am fast, I am strong, like I can do it, I can do it, I can do it, and I like repeat it to myself over and over again, and I feel like that really helps. I always suggest that to people. I think that's something that's really helped me. It's kind of changing my mental approach to racing and training and everything to do with running, really.
Yeah, definitely. I think that comes along with growth in the sport. I know so many high schoolers that do the same thing as you. I mean, you're not alone in the fact that you were almost in tears before races. Like, I know people that are crying before the race even starts, but people are throwing up because they're so nervous. Mm-hmm. And the amount of times, including myself, like have just given up halfway through when you feel like the race isn't going your way. It's just a huge mindset shift that needs to happen. Like you said, mm-hmm. getting to the line excited is the best thing in the world. And it'll really, really affect the outcome of the race. It's so important to, like you said, work on your mentality. And I think that is a really good idea, just kind of looking at yourself in the mirror. Because like, how many times do you actually talk to yourself in a mirror? Not that often. Yeah. I if you've watched my like Oregon vlog, I think it was regionals. Mm-hmm. I literally do this pep talk before every race. Like it came off as a joke, but I feel like I honestly did it, and it was kind of just looking at myself in the mirror, like you said, and being like, okay, you're not going to give up today. Like you're not a little wussy. Yeah,
exactly. You have to convince yourself that it's true. Like, cause if you know that, sometimes I'll like look at my workouts and I'm like, yeah, like I am in good shape. Like I am a fast runner, but you like don't actually for some reason believe that that's the case. Like I'll be like, I am fast. Like all the numbers show that. And then there's like a voice in my head that's like, actually you're slow and the workouts are a lie. So I think like just like looking in the mirror and telling that stuff to me has really helped me like believe that I actually like am doing something and I like can race well. But yeah,
and there's something about looking in the mirror that like it's kind of like gets into your soul, you know. It's a little deeper than just like saying it out loud. Like looking at yourself in the eyes in the mirror and telling yourself that, it kind of hits different, I will say.
Period.
I recommend. So we're transitioning now. The reason I found Jordan is because I was scrolling through TikTok, you know, like the millennial I am, not really knowing what's going on. And I come across this guy who is the most positive person and has the most energy about oatmeal that I've ever seen in my life. And I was like, oh my gosh, who is this? I resonated with him so much. I would call you, honestly, the oatmeal king of TikTok. Like, your oats and the passion that you have for them, it's something that I can only aspire to be. So, when did you start posting on TikTok? Why did you start posting your oatmeal? And just describe the passion that you have for your oatmeal.
Okay, so I literally have, like, eaten oatmeal forever. Like, I literally I've made your oats, your zucchini oats, like, 1,000 times in my life. literally that's where this all started. But I started so I used to post like anything and everything on TikTok. Like I used to get on every trend. I used to do like every dance, and I just would get like, I don't know, a couple hundred views. Like I didn't care. I did not care about TikTok. Like I never thought that I was going to have any sort of platform on TikTok. Like I would joke around with my friends. I'd be like, this is going to go viral. I am so hilarious. But But then one day I made a bowl of oats and they just were looking particularly immaculate that day. And I was just so excited to eat them. And I just caught this moment of me screaming about the oats. And then I posted it. And then a couple of days later, I was like, why does this have like over 100,000 views on it? I was like, I don't know what is going on. And so then I was like, if that's what the people want. And so then I started doing like, started posting more oats and started posting stuff about my running. And then a couple of my TikToks just started like taking off. And then all of a sudden it was like 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, 40,000. And I was like, I don't know what's going on. I don't really know what's going on. But I love oatmeal. I'm glad that there's such a group of people out there that are also really passionate about it, which I've learned. I did not know it was such a widespread thing, but it's been really fun.
Yeah, oatmeal TikTok is a thing. I have found myself on there, obviously. Is that surprising? No.
I'm all over it now. I'm kind of like, did I invent that? But I don't think so, because I think people were doing it before me, but I'm just like, I didn't know it existed before I started doing it. And now my For You page is like half oats, half running, and then like half like whatever's hot on TikTok at the moment. Like the I Am Lost ones with the little eyes and mouth. I love those.
Honestly, same. We probably have a very similar For You page. What does it feel like to like have a following now?
It's so weird for me still. Like, I feel like you can probably relate to it. I imagine you get recognized like a decent amount whenever you're like in running circles that people like know yeah. who you are. Like, I mean, I told the people I'm with at this show, I was like, oh, I have a podcast with Emma Abrahamson, and they were like, oh my god, no way, that's amazing. And I was like, I know, but but I don't know, I feel like when I look at the number on TikTok under followers, like I just can't even like actually conceive of like them as actual like human beings, that like 80 something thousand individual people are following me on this platform. Like, I just can't even like process that, how many people that is, and the kind of interaction and hype that I get in the comments, I'm like, this is crazy. But it has been really nice, because I do feel like all of my followers that I've talked to are like so kind and so nice and so like kind of similar to me. And I'm like, this is awesome. And I love it. Although I have been getting recognized like here and there, like in public, which I literally was actually shook the first time it happened. I was like, this cannot be real. Like, I had like 40,000 followers at the time. I was 3 hours away from my home with my friend Ethan on a run. And this girl, I can't remember her name, but she like fully like almost came to a stop in her vehicle, like on the road, and was like, she was like, oh my god, Jordan, like I follow you on TikTok, like I love your videos so much. And I was like, this has to be fake. And then I talked to her for a couple of minutes and she drove away, and I was like, I cannot believe that people are gonna like know who I am. And since then, it's probably happened like 5 or 6 other times, and every single time it's like I can tell the person is like looking at me, and I'm like, oh my god, like what is wrong with me? Like, is something on me? Like, I cannot process it until they like say, like, I follow you on TikTok. And I'm like, oh my god, thank god. I thought you just like thought I was like hideous and staring at me or something. But yeah.
Oh my gosh. I cannot describe like how similar my experience is to that. I remember when I first moved to Atlanta right after college, it was literally the day I moved there. Granted, I didn't know anyone in Atlanta. I didn't know anything. I was in some random town. I wasn't even in the city. I was in like a suburb. And I walk into this Mod Pizza, and the guy that was making the pizza is just staring at me. And I was like, there's no way that this guy knows who I am. Like, there's just a distinct stare that I think you kind of like, you can kind of tell if they recognize you a little bit.
Yes.
And the guy was giving me that stare. And I was like, there's no way that in this random town, me ordering this Mod Pizza, that this guy watches my YouTube videos. And he's like, what's your name? And I'm like, Emma. He's like, do you have a YouTube channel? I was like, and I was just so shook. I did not know how to react. And I was like, how do I act in this situation? Like, I didn't know what to do.
I'm so awkward. I'm so awkward. I want to apologize to everyone that like meet.
I feel like I do.
I feel like I have to, like, because I'm like, oh my god, like, what if they, like, all of a sudden, like, think that I'm, like, not even, like, funny anymore? I'm like, what do I do? Like, do I make a joke? I don't know. I don't know how to act. I don't know how to behave.
Oh my gosh, same.
I'm like, hi. Like, it's also, like, it's such a unique experience to, like, have someone that, like, really, like, feels like they know who you are because they watch you, but you obviously know nothing about them. Like, you try learn about as much as people that you can, but, like, I feel like it's such a weird the sides of the experience are totally different because one person is like, I know who this is. Another person is like, this is a completely new face, new person. And I'm also just awkward in general. So this has, like, been really new and really fun. But everyone I've met has been, like, so sweet about it.
Yeah, same. Everyone I meet, I'm so excited. I get so excited. It, like, makes my day when I meet someone that watches my stuff. But like you said, it is a funny experience. Like, sometimes, especially in anything in the running world, people will just be like, Emma. And I, like, look and they're staring at me and I have no idea who the person is. And I'm just like, and I just feel so awkward because I'm like, what do I do? I don't know what to do. But I feel like that's just how it is for everyone, I guess. It's an unusual world, honestly, but it's a fun time. So I'm glad that you're.
It's happened so fast. Like, that's the craziest thing about this. It's been, like, literally in early April, I had, like, less than 100 followers on TikTok.
Oh, and my gosh. Wow. Yeah, you really blew up.
And now I'm like, what is it? I don't even know what freaking month it is anymore. I can't keep track of anything. The days are just passing me by. But yeah, literally, it's all of a sudden going from, like, just my actual friends, like, knowing who I am, and now, like, supposedly 80,000 people do. It's crazy.
What do your friends think of it?
They really, like, think it's fascinating. A lot of people have been, like, some of my friends have been, like, yeah, we, like, knew that you would be internet famous one day. And I'm, like, I don't know about that, but they, like, it's fun. Like, I try to, like, I don't know. I don't even know what they really think about it, honestly. It's been, like, fun for all of us, though. But I haven't been around a lot of my friends, though, either, is the thing. Like,
it's true.
I spent a lot of the time, because I really got invested in TikTok when I was, like, alone in my home, like, not seeing anybody. So I've really only been around, like, a couple of my friends. I haven't seen any of my friends from school since, I guess that's actually a fib, because I was just there, like, last week. But before that, I haven't seen any of my friends from school, like, since this social media takeoff occurred. So
the true test will come when you're starting to vlog in front of them, see what their reactions are.
Oh my god, I can't vlog. People keep telling me to do vlogs on YouTube. I made one YouTube vlog and I was like, I can't, I don't understand vlogging. I don't know what to do.
Why?
I don't know what to say.
Yeah, it is quite awkward. It's just awkward when you're, it's one thing to do, like, 10 second little clips, but then it's another thing to, like, just talk for a couple minutes to a camera. Like, it's a weird experience. Honestly, it took me a long time to get used to it. I don't know, but you should keep doing it, especially if TikTok goes down. Oh my god,
don't even get me started with that. I can't even think about that.
I'm being an optimist. I really hope it doesn't, but I hope it does, because the time of day, like, the amount of time I would have in the day would increase dramatically.
I spend a repulsive amount of time on TikTok. It's, like, not even okay.
Yeah, it's literally disgusting, same. I would say you're one of the biggest, like, motivational runners on TikTok. What do you find that motivates you to, like, keep posting motivational things for others? Because I know it can take, like, a lot out of you when you're feeling, like, obligated to create content, but just, like, posting, helping others motivate you to do that? Or what kind of motivates you to keep posting on TikTok?
Yeah, I think that's a hard question, because I feel like I really am a motivated person, like, to run. Like, I really do love to run, and all of that is, like, very genuine. But I've tried to, like, I mean, even recently I've tried, like, in one of my last, like, TikTok videos, I was like, I did not feel good on my run today, like, at all. Because I think a lot of people are trying to get the impression that, like, just every day I wake up and I'm, like, excited to run and I, like, have a perfect run every day. And I'm just like, that is not the case. I'm like, it's the case a lot, but it's just not, that's not, like, the reality of, like, my everyday life. But I felt it's so rewarding when people have, like, commented on my TikTok or, like, DM'd me on Instagram or through whatever means and just said, like, you've really, like, helped me, like, find my love for running again. Like, you really helped me get out the door today. Or, like, I started training for a marathon because of you. And I find that so rewarding just because I love running so much and I love the running community so much. I just think that's what's been motivating me to keep making motivational stuff and trying to, although I didn't even really see it as motivational at first. I kind of just think that I'm like really hyper and excited about everything in my life. So that just like motivates people to also be that way. But I didn't even like know I was doing motivational content until everyone was like, this is so motivational. And I was like, yeah, I guess it is. The other element of it is that when I'm on my runs now, I kind of, and I'm like not feeling good, or I'm like, oh, this is not like a good day for me, I start thinking about like all those people that have like said that like what I do like motivates them to run. And I'm like, well, then I need to keep myself accountable and like keep putting in that effort because people are like looking at me and using me as like an example. I don't know. It's kind of like a reverse. It kind of works both ways. Like I motivate them, and then the people that like feel motivated by me like motivate me to like keep doing what I'm doing and keep running and keep training and doing my miles. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel the exact same way. It definitely goes both ways. And like you said, I didn't really see myself, especially when I was like in college, I didn't see really my content as motivating at all. I kind of was just documenting my day. But I would get messages of people being like, oh my gosh, like this helped me start running. This like made running fun for me, or messages like that. And I was like, whoa, just, I don't know. And that's kind of what mm-hmm. has kept me going. Like, even though I've taken quite a few breaks from running, I think just documenting like life experiences, yeah. I think is really helpful for other people because I mean, we're all going through similar things a lot of the time. So I think just watching other people go through the similar things as you, especially in running, I think it's just really powerful. So I'm always Absolutely. Excited to see like new content creators like you on the platforms. And I know there's like a lot of running YouTubers that are coming up in the scene. And I think it's really exciting just to, I don't know, just start sharing more about the running world. It's fun.
Yes, I love it.
Do you see yourself like doing content creation full time, or what do you want to get into career-wise when you graduate?
So, you know, this whole content creation thing was never really something that I saw myself being involved in. I really feel like I really do love TikTok. I love that medium specifically. YouTube, I'm like working on it. I plan to continue to build my platforms that I have, but I actually on a pre-law track right now. So I actually am in the process of like applying to law schools. So that is the next step for me, is going to law school after I graduate from Villanova. So right now, like, it doesn't look like content creation will be a full-time situation for me.
But very different.
Yeah, I definitely want to keep doing it in any way that I can. But yeah, I'm like, I just took my law school admissions test like a couple weeks ago, still waiting for the result from that. But yeah, so that's the plan, is to continue in law school and continue running, and I'll obviously try to do as much social media stuff as I can, because I really do love social media. Like I'm like, sometimes I'm like, maybe I love it a little bit too much, but I have I really love it. I want to keep doing it. But
what area of law are you going into, do you know? I don't really know how law stuff works, to be honest.
Yeah, so you basically have to take, like, and luckily you have to take classes in basically all of the basic areas, and then you kind of specialize. But right now, I think I'm most interested and most passionate about, like, civil rights and public policy work. That's, like, what I feel most passionate about. Yeah, that's where I see myself going
of right now. Nice. And how did you kind of discover your passion for that outside of, I mean, running came to you in high school. Like, was that something that you were also interested in high school and passionate about?
So I went into college as a pre-med biology major.
And whoa.
Yeah, I was like upset. I wanted to be a doctor since I was in like seventh grade. And now, I mean, in hindsight, I'm like, perhaps I never wanted to be a doctor and I just like the idea of it. But in early college, I started to just learn that it wasn't really going to be for me. I think a lot of my peers that were also pre-med, they kind of were like, I could tell that they really loved science. And I was like, I don't want to. And like the idea of going to another 4-year school that would be 90% science, like made me want to like, I don't even know, quit school forever and never come back. So I was like, I need a change. And I think I became particularly passionate about civil rights work and government work. I'd say it was probably catalyzed mainly by the 2016 presidential election. I think that was a big eye opener for a lot of people, and particularly me. I just felt like really passionate about that election cycle, and I kind of wanted to get into politics after that. I think it was just something that I was reading about every day and something that I was really fascinated with and like wanted to learn more about. And so I switched to political science the second semester of my sophomore year. And I remember signing that paper to switch majors. I walked out of that building and I felt like a weight had been lifted off my chest. And I was like so excited. And I love that decision that I've made. And I've also been, the other part of that is I was working, so I was part of the sophomore service learning community at Villanova, which was basically you took a course that was like social justice oriented, and then you would serve at a service site 3 hours a week, and then you had a 1 hour kind of like discussion-based class. And I started out by working at a very underfunded school in the city of Philadelphia. And I think I gained so much perspective because I'm from like a pretty well-off suburb in the middle of Connecticut. And so just going and working at an elementary school in like a not very nice part of Philadelphia and like seeing like that difference in the learning experience and in the classroom environment and everything else was really like eye-opening for me. And I just felt really passionate about kind of getting into it and seeing like what can be done to like make it better. And then that was the next year I worked at a nonprofit called Sisters Returning Home that I still have some ties to. And it was, which is a nonprofit organization that helps women that have recently been released from prison, like reorient into society and like find places to live and places to work. And then just like talking with these women and the things that they've had to like go through in their lives and things that how they ended up in jail or out of jail or whatever the case may be, and just seeing how difficult their lives have been, like largely because of the way that the government operates and the way civil rights laws operate and the way in the state of race relations in America has kind of made those situations the way they are. That's kind of like what made me really passionate about getting into it. That was like a chaotically long answer that took so many different directions, but
no, I mean, that was great. Yeah. And I think it just shows like, just because you go into college with a specific thing in mind, doesn't mean that you have to stick with it. I mean, I feel like people grow a lot in college. Clearly you have, and you found new interests and a newfound passion for politics. And I think it's really cool that you decided to change your path, despite what, like, I don't know, maybe that you went into it thinking that you wanted to be a doctor, just kind of having the courage to change your mind and focus on something that you're passionate about. And I think, I don't know, I think that's a good way to live life. So I feel like you made the right decision, and it'll be an exciting future for you moving forward.
We hope.
So I really want to talk about your experience being openly gay in the competitive running world, because I have friends like Nikki Hiltz and Teresa Heiss. I've had them both on the podcast, but I'm curious to what your experience has been like as an openly gay male, because I haven't really talked to anyone about it. So I think it'd be insightful to hear from you what that's been like in the running world.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I had more issues with it in high school. I think I just wasn't really comfortable with myself. And so like anything that anyone said to me, I found like hurtful just because I wasn't really like comfortable with myself, and I didn't like that I was gay. I didn't like that about myself at the time. But I remember in high school, there was like a couple different incidences that like occurred at meets where people would say like different things to me about being gay and like making fun of me for it. And I never really cared like that much. And I have something that I actually wrote about. I've been writing about this in my law school application essay a little bit. Is that I definitely found in high school, especially, that like I had to like constantly, or at least I felt like I had to constantly be proving that like I was a good athlete. And I kind of felt like members of my team would like overlook me and think that I wasn't as good as them because I was gay. Cause it, like there was no other like reason that like came to mind like that like made sense. Or there was like, I remember there was a couple of times on my team that people were like mad or they were like upset because they had gotten beaten by a gay athlete, which is just like completely absurd, obviously. But the faster I got, I think, and the more competitive I was, and like the more I leaned into the sport, I feel like the more respect I got from like my teammates in high school. And then in college, I think there was definitely a significant shift in my experience with being a gay athlete, because I felt like for whatever reason, my college experience was much more, I feel like, open to LGBTQ plus people, and then to the point where I became the president of the club. And then once I became the president of the club team, I felt like much more comfortable with everything, because I was like, now I'm kind of like setting the tone for the club itself. Like it is like in a lot of ways my club. So I was like, I can obviously like be whoever I want. And I tried to like create a space in that club where everyone feels like that's the case. Like it doesn't matter if you're gay, straight, bi, lesbian, whatever the heck, like no one cares. And that's not going to impact how you're able to interact with the team and et cetera. And then I think in my online presence, I've been trying to do the same, as trying to show that there are like gay athletes. Like I feel like a lot of sports get like hyper masculinized, and I think even women are a lot of times aren't looked at as like real athletes in the way that they should. And I think that also applies to like men like myself that like, I don't know, maybe act traditionally more feminine than other men. But yeah, so I've tried to like, it's definitely been a big growing experience. But I think in college, like now being gay is not something that I'm self-conscious about at all. And it's something that I actually quite like about myself. So now, like if I ever encounter a person that is like has a problem with me being gay, I'm kind of like, that's your problem. And I honestly could not care less, because that's not something that bothers me. So like literally there's nothing anyone could say about my sexuality that would like actually upset me anymore. I think that's like the biggest thing that I've had to learn or had to deal with, is just kind of like coming to that accepting place with yourself. Because once you like, you're like, I like that I'm gay. If someone says like, you're gay as an insult, you're kind of like, okay, well, that kind of like missed the mark. Like, tell me something that I don't know. But yeah, I don't know what else to add but that.
Awesome. And I think going to college, you just kind of encounter a lot more diversity just in general. I mean, I know I did. I grew up in a very white suburb, I would say well-off area. So I think college kind of opened my eyes to even like going to Oregon, just like a more liberal viewpoint. So I don't know. I feel like in college people, including myself, are just, you're just a lot more open to expressing yourself however you want. I don't know. There just wasn't as much pressure to like fit into a certain mold this way or that way. And also I think people like you and people like Nikki, who are so vocal about being openly gay in the running world, I think it makes a huge difference moving forward, especially, and for people that are younger who may have felt like you did back in high school. I think having people like you is really, really going to help them in the future, just being confident in their sexuality at an earlier age.
Yeah, what I would add is sometimes I've had like moments, even still now, where I'm like, when I'm going to like a new place where I don't think I'm going to know a lot of people, or I'm going to be around like a lot of new people, I'll be like, I'll have like this little voice in my head that's like, maybe you should like tone it down a little bit. Like maybe like don't act like so gay or like dress so gay or like whatever. And then I always just remember, I'm like, I need to, like, I think it's so important that, like, so other people can see that, like, you can be openly gay and you can do whatever you want. And I think it's like really important to like have visible people that are gays and all aspects of the LGBTQ plus community, of course, just having visible people like in the running world and just in life in general, so that more people can feel like that's, I don't know, I'm using air quotes, like normal or accepted or et cetera. But yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I was looking on your Twitter and you are very outspoken,
I'm very loud on Twitter.
I absolutely love it. I quoted some of the tweets for this podcast, and I want to have you explain them a little bit.
Okay.
They're pretty lighthearted, don't worry. Okay, so one of them that I came across was, I eat cough drops as candy, and I'm not going to hide it anymore. Can you explain that one a little bit?
That's actually psychotic of me, but I do. I think I haven't in a while because I don't have many cough drops, but like my dad just bought like this giant thing of cough drops when COVID started happening. None of us had it, but he just had this giant thing of cough drops. And I just kept finding myself like walking past the cough drop bag and like eating one. And then my parents were getting upset with me. They're like, that's not candy, Jordan. And I was like, well, it tastes really good and I like it. And so I was eating like a lot a day. And then I read the bag and they were like, you should really only have like 3 or 4 of these in 24 hours. And I was like, okay, well, I'll tone it down. And so I really haven't been eating them like that anymore. But yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the far as I can explain.
I like how they bought cough drops, like cough drops cure coronavirus.
So. Yeah, like preemptively. Yeah. And like no one really, I think we still have a ton.
Yeah. Okay, here's another one. I like my cereal soggy, okay? I admit it. Hate me if you want. # this is me. That, honestly, I was repulsed by that one.
I know. I said it on my TikTok, too. And I think you commented.
Oh, yeah. Probably did, because it triggers me so much. Why do you like your cereal soggy? That's gross.
I can't even, like, I just don't find it gross, is what it comes down to. I think it's so much better that way. I think it reminds me more of my oatmeal when I have it soggy. I will wait for it to get soggy. I'm gonna sound like such a psychopath, but
what?
I literally
cereal.
I used to, okay, so I'm really into, I loved Special K. Special K was like my favorite, and then I eat Honey Bunches of Oats a lot. And I no, Emma, your tier list of cereals, I literally was triggered. I was so triggered. I was so mad. But yeah, I'm like a Honey Bunches of Oats fan.
So is everyone else in this world, except for me, apparently.
Everyone tries to come for me for that because it's not technically vegan. And I'm like, you know what? I'm like, I have to give myself some slack. I'm like, that is my favorite cereal, whatever. But yeah, that's my go-to. Yeah.
Nice. And then the last one I wrote down was, eating grapefruit is self-harm. Reach out to your friends who are doing this. And then you also followed it up with, you have to put sugar on this fruit to make it edible. That is completely counterintuitive to the purpose of a fruit. How did that come about? Were you eating a grapefruit? I hate grapefruit, so I agree with you on this.
We're on the same page. I stand by that completely, and it's funny because I just had this very similar discussion with this girl from Villanova, and she was eating a grapefruit, and I was like, the grapefruit does not want to be eaten. When you eat a grapefruit, it tastes poisonous. It fights back. It doesn't want to be consumed. Like when you, I feel like I feel like any other animal would be like, this is poisonous. I need to stop eating it. But we're just like, we're going to add sugar and plow through. I hate it. I hate everything about the grapefruit.
Okay. Honestly, me too. It's disgusting. It's like a lemon. Why would you want to like eat that straight up with a spoon?
I don't know what like incentivized me that day to tweet that, but I'm very passionate about my distaste for anything grapefruit.
Yeah, no offense, but like if I ever see anyone eating grapefruit, I'm like, what on earth are you doing? That's my first thought. I'm savage, I guess, but.
Yep, those were good tweets. Those were funny tweets. I was afraid you were going to like make me explain something like really, really intense.
No. I don't really do that on this podcast. Yeah. To close out the episode, I think this has been such a fun episode. I'm really glad I had you on. But to close out, do you have a quote that you live by? I feel like you'd be someone that has quotes pinned up on their wall, and you say it to yourself in the mirror every morning.
Yeah, I do like quotes, because I think when you told me they were like, maybe prepare a quote, I was like, I don't need to prepare. I have so many quotes that come to mind. I somehow have this. I mean, okay, so first of all, I end all of my TikToks with like either captioning or saying like, eat well, run fast, be happy. And I kind of said that on accident and then it stuck. So that's something that I remind myself of, I remind my followers of all the time. But I also really like, it's a Maya Angelou quote, and it's kind of like, still I rise, just like that little fragment of one of her poems. I just find that poem so insightful and so motivational. Like, whatever life throws at you, like, you'll be fine. Like, you will keep plowing right on through. And also, for some reason, I don't know why these three words like stick in my mind, but relentless forward progress is literally the title of like a book written by an ultra marathoner whose name I can't remember right now. But for some reason, like, I just, that speaks to me in so many different areas of my life. Like, I always think about that, like in running, in academics, just like in life in general, just like moving forward in all the ways that you can, just like relentlessly, just no matter what, just keep on pressing on. That was like three. But yeah, those are ones that come to mind that speak to me the most. But,
awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, to close out this episode, can we get a good old peace out, fellas, for the podcast?
But of course, peace out, fellas.
Thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode of Convos Over Cold Brew. It was a little bit longer this time, but I could seriously talk to Jordan for hours. I feel like he just had some great insight, and I just really like his vibe. I really like his personality. So make sure to follow him on Instagram and TikTok. It's just at Jordan McMeans. He has some great content, especially on TikTok, I will say. So go check him out. This week's supporter shout out goes to Emily. Emily, my girl, thank you for supporting the podcast. I shout out one of my supporters every single week, and it's super easy to go and support. If you go to anchor.fm/convosovercoldbrew, you can click the support button and just make a monthly donation. It really, really helps out the podcast. Another thing that really, really helps the podcast is if you listen on an Apple Podcast, rating and reviewing, it helps spread the word a lot, and it just means a lot to me to hear you guys' feedback. So thank you guys so much for listening, and I will hear from you guys in the next one. Peace out, fellas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.